Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast, where we try to bring to you people in the health and wellness fields to help you along your human journey. In this episode, I was able to interview John Yen. It was actually very delightful for me to have a conversation with him into the deeper aspects of movement, how people perceive movement, and what it is that we can do moving forward as accomplishments to movement and really different ways of thinking about it. So it was such a sit down, have some tea type of conversation. I really hope that you find some useful information out of this so that you can have a day-to-day type of practice that doesn't have to have pressure. So I hope you enjoy. Hi, John.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So I've followed you for probably 4 years now, maybe five. I've done a lot of your online programs. I follow you on social media, and I currently just did a program that you hosted with Oliver. So I've gotten to know your work and what you do and how helpful it is. So I thought you could be really helpful to a lot of the people that might be listening to this. I, you know, think during COVID, we could use any tips and tools that we can. So I was wondering if you would mind just telling people a little bit about yourself. What do you want people to know?
Hello, my name is John. I am definitely a human. I work as a trainer. Before I worked as a trainer, I worked as a dancer and I practiced lots of different martial arts. And I really wanted to contribute to the gym culture and to my work as a personal trainer by bringing in elements from dance and martial arts. Not necessarily because they're better than things that are being presented in the gym or the fitness culture, but because I think variety is the spice of life. And different people have different tastes, and there are a lot of people that the gym culture can't, or they're not necessarily catering to their tastes. And I think that by being able to contribute with more elements and more ideas, we can help more people. And also, I like doing different kind of things. So that's also why I do it.
Different movements, you mean? Just being different able movements. To do different movements. Yeah.
Yeah.
So were you a professional dancer?
Well, I was fortunate enough to get paid for moving my body and time with music on stage and off stage. So yeah, I guess so. I mean, everything happened pretty fast. I met this ballet teacher when I worked at the opera here in Norway, and he kind of took me under his wings, and he said, like, because I've been, you know, working on stage, and he said, I think you should dance, and I said, okay, and he just mentored me, trained me, and he had this immense amount of belief in me, which made me kind of believe in myself, you know? So I said to him, I'm going to give it everything and my everything. And in not too long, I ended up getting my first paid job.
That's so cool. So I was going to ask you how you transitioned from the dance world into the movement world, but it seems like your world was movement, you know, starting with martial arts and just moving in general, and now are solely doing teachings and training of how to move the body in different ways to keep it fit, out of pain, understanding how your body moves, what it can do, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So you had done this thing where you sent, you committed to sending an email a week for a year. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah, so, that was a fun little experiment.
So did you challenge yourself to be able to do that? Like what made you decide to do that?
I wanted to experience what it was like to put some substance to my thoughts and my words by putting them on paper. And that way, you know, you get to observe yourself from the outside. You don't give yourself as many excuses as when you're, as an example, when you listen to yourself in a video or a podcast, because then you can be like, oh, I just misspoke. And yeah, I guess I just wanted to experience that and also what it was like to just write on a frequent basis and see what came out of it. I think, you know, a creative process is very much a structured process where you need to tell yourself, I'm going to make something, and you can't just wait for inspiration. You kind of make a deal with yourself. And one article / newsletter a week didn't seem like an impossible deal. So just went for it.
I personally loved it. I loved knowing that they were coming. I was intrigued by what was going to be in there. And, you know, the duration of it, knowing that it was definitely going to be a year. So I knew that I could sit down and really immerse into what was going on in your mind and what you were sharing with people. So there's so many things that I want to talk about just this kind of task that you put at hand for the year. So one, every time you send an email, there was like history in there. There was a lot of history about everything. I mean, there was movement, but there was also like science in there, and there was also doctors in there. How do you know all this knowledge? Did you go to school for any of this, or do you just know it? Like, how did you study all this?
Just by being interested, you know, and trying to look at what we do not only as a science and not only as an art, but as an element that has existed in our lives and on our planet for way longer than we have been alive. You know, it's so easy to forget that the things and the concepts that we're exploring, besides really recent technology, has existed for a really long period of time. And it would be to lack imagination to think that what we're doing is revolutionizing all the time, or revolutionary, or that it hasn't happened before. And there's a lot of things that we can learn from the people in the past, both from their successes and their mistakes. And just by knowing that there's history to what we do, to know that what we are doing has been done before or explored from different angles, it allows us to just to take a step back away from the topic that we're exploring and to get to broaden our horizons a bit.
So for myself, and what I got out of them was, of course, this history piece and the depth that you went to tie it in to today's world and give offerings. So every email you would try to give an offering to of something that we could either trial in our lives or maybe research further. So I really, really appreciated that. So I don't know if I told you, but thank you. Thank you for doing those.
You're welcome. I'm happy you enjoyed them.
Did you get feedback on them?
Yeah, I got a surprising amount of feedback, which was really heartwarming, you know, because one thing is when you post stuff on Instagram or social media in general, where you are really competing for a person's attention. It's not necessarily that the person is on Instagram or on Facebook or on Twitter just to see you, though there are cases where that happens, of course. So when a person gave me feedback on a newsletter, I understood that they'd taken the time to open up that email and to read the entire thing, or at least the majority of it, I suspect, and then they decide to write down a reply. To me, that is, the very ugly head of the monster known as imposter syndrome reared up from the depths of my my lack of confidence. But once I kind of just decided to trust whatever these people said, it felt amazing, and it felt really humbling as well.
Yeah, because once you send an email, you can't take it back. It's out there. That's the other thing I liked about it, was that it was this permanence that was going out there, that, it was going to be there for the ages, really. I saved all of them because they all had their own little gem within. But the biggest thing that I loved about them was the commitment. So I think that one thing that is lacking for people is trialing something for a long period of time. So I had done this thing in 2019 where I said, I'm going to do these specific things every day. So for 365 days, I wanted to get these specific things in. And it is very difficult, on days where life happens, to get them in, but it meant staying up later or getting up earlier or missing things. But the best part of it was committing to something that I thought was worthwhile. And I feel the same about following someone. So for me, following you, it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to follow John, I'm going to learn everything about John. So what are his teachings? What is it that he has to offer? Take all the courses, read all of his blogs and writings, and really try to understand stuff to the fullest, because that's a pocket in the world of information that you have some knowledge and history that we don't have. And so everyone has something to offer. So it's like delving, committing, and understanding, but delving to the commitment of like going all in. And I feel like that's what those emails were just like this diving in and committing. Like there were times where you were in the car and you were traveling and you were like, I've got to get this email out. And like, you did it.
Yeah. And you know what? Those are the moments that I remember the most, when my commitment becomes an inconvenience. And it's an inconvenience, not because I have to do it, but it's because it's a responsibility that I've chosen, to take. But yeah, those are the ones that I look back on with a lot of fondness. Like I really appreciated those moments because I felt proud. I was like, well done, you actually did it. And like I tried to convey in the emails, like I don't care. I'm not saying well done because it was a masterful piece of literature. It was well done because it was done. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was. And I think that it was a teaching for people in the understanding that you can do something like that. That's small, I guess, but it's huge, because like you just said, you did it. And I think that's a good transition actually into movement, where people just have to move. So even if it means just get up and down the hallway or whatever they need to do, it's like, just do it. So let's get into movement. So you're all about just move with what you have, right? Use what you have. So do you want to maybe give some of your philosophy around your movement style, or how you think humans should be moving?
Sure. My philosophy is that the fact that you move is infinitely more important and valuable than how you move. There are so many people out there who are profiting from presenting a very specific solution to people. We live in a day and age where we've never had as many specific answers as to how a person should move or how they should be healthy, as we do right now. The problem with all these specific solutions is that they imply that you have a specific problem, right? So you need to run like this, specifically like this. If you don't do that, well, you're going to have a problem. You know, you're going to injure yourself, or you're not going to be honoring your body's primal blueprint or something like that. And I appreciate that people try to come up with specific suggestions so that it's easier for people to go like, I'm going to do this specific thing. I don't have to fumble in the dark. I don't have to experiment. I don't have to do my own research. I can just do this. But at the same time, it causes a lot of trepidation in a lot of people. They are scared of moving, not just because of the immense amount of pressure that we give to people by saying, you need to be this and this healthy, and you need to move in this and this way, and you need to, you know, you need to look like a Greek god, or you should be able to perform at a certain level. But we scare them because they think that they're going to injure themselves or harm themselves somehow by not doing things in a very specific way. And so my spiel, I guess, is, you know, just focus on the practical and the personal aspect of moving. So what do you need to move? What motivates you? What feels good? What kind of movement can you present yourself that is as nurturing as it is challenging? Does it always have to be challenging? Does it always have to be a pleasant experience? No person is different, and no person is the same from day to day. So I think it's valuable to give people the opportunity to explore how they can move, and how they want to move and feel like they need to move on different days.
I think too, giving them parameters. I think people like to know where to start, and they like being told what to do. So they feel like what they're doing is right or wrong. I think in the mind, it feels better to have that sort of sense of, I've done it well, just like the emails, I've done it well, and I haven't done it well. And more, it's just, you did it.
Yeah.
So when you think about movement, sometimes people, do you think that if it's easy for them, that's still better than making yourself hurt to feel like you've accomplished more? You know, these people that have to feel like, for example, a yoga class that might be gentle versus I went out for a run and I sweat. So that must be better.
I think we shouldn't think of them as being better or worse options. We should think of them as being choices that can be better or worse for us on any given day, you know, depending on how we feel. Like sometimes I like to go down into the murky depths of discomfort and like work out hard, sometimes because it feels like I have the surplus of energy. Sometimes I do it as a type of expression of how I feel. Sometimes I just really want to have something else to think about, or which in the context of training, if I push myself hard, then I don't think about anything. But sometimes I feel like going more gentle. And I think that it's important to allow yourself to have more standards. You know, we talk so much about grit and discipline and to which standard you should tell yourself that you should perform or work out. But, you know, no day is the same. You should probably allow yourself to be more gentle with yourself on certain days and to push yourself on others.
Do you think that people have lost the ability to feel their bodies the way they used to?
I think that like all other input that we process it through different or through a filter, you know? And in the case of movement and fitness, I think the most dominant filter is answers and information that we've been given, you know? So a lot of people, instead of thinking, do I feel tired? Do I feel energized? Do I feel like I should move this body part? Do I feel like I should not move this body part? We start thinking about very specific details instead because we've been presented these specific details, you know? So we start thinking about, oh, what is the long head of my bicep doing today? What's going on there? Or is that a trigger point I feel? Hey, IT band, what are you doing? Oh, is my pelvis tilted? You know, we start thinking about these very specific ideas that we've been presented, and then we filter our experience through that information, which I think at times it can be beneficial so that you get to focus on something more specific. But in general, I think that it kind of pollutes our intuition.
I think it can also be information overload.
Yeah, definitely.
Way too much information for people to process and understand. And then they're almost like paralyzed by where to even start or what to even do. I like that personal practice way of moving, because moving how your body dictates in one given practice is really how we should be moving, which means getting that run in every day may not be the most beneficial, because if you're tired, you actually are tired and maybe you don't need the run that day. Although I don't know of a time where I exercised and didn't feel great after, but there are some people who do push through and push through and push through. And it's like a badge of honor to have pain and injuries that you're pushing through. And I'm not sure that's great.
No, I think that this is one of the worst contributions of fitness culture, is that we present working out as a type of battle. And it's one thing that we romanticize fighting and battling and war, but another thing is that we end up making unnecessary sacrifices. You're not fighting against yourself. You should be collaborating with yourself and with your own body.
Ooh, collaborating. I love that. That's true. We should be collaborating.
It's a dialogue. That's the thing. Like listening to, we often say that you should listen to your body. And I think it's a really nice piece of advice, but I also enjoy thinking about it as a type of, I don't want my body just to talk to me. I don't want it to have a monologue. I want it there to be a dialogue. So when I wake up and I think about my workout, I don't 100% trust how I feel. I respect how I feel. I respect my body. And then I try to communicate with it through actually moving it. And that can be, you know, just doing some chores and just kind of trying to pay attention to how I feel. Sometimes it can be putting on a song and just moving, wiggling my body a bit. Sometimes it could be in my workout. And then I try to establish this dialogue where I go, okay, this body part feels a bit wonky or weird today. Is that an everlasting eternal truth? Can it change after just a couple of movements? And lo and behold, in many cases, it actually does. But it's when you listen to that information during that dialogue, if you feel, okay, my knee hurts, or my elbow feels weird, or I feel really tired, and you constantly try to push through that because you see working out as a conflict, that's when I think you kind of miss out on many opportunities to give yourself better experiences by maybe lowering the intensity a bit.
I feel like it's like a meditation. You know, you're so present in everything, so the feeling of the body, maybe the temperature of the air, all the things going on, that you're deciding your movement as you go. That's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, oh, that's one of my, I think that's one of my favorite things about actually working out. I would like to say that my favorite thing is, you know, to be healthy and all this stuff, but health is really, really difficult to notice until it's not there, you know? So when I feel normal, so not in an unhealthy state, whatever that might be, the thing that I really, really enjoy about moving my body is that you get to be mindful in a very unique way. You know, we spend so much of our time in this realm of imagination. I think that like 75 or 80 or 85% of my waking moments, I think about things that have happened or are going to happen. But when I work out, I get to be with myself in that moment through movement. And even though like seated meditation can be a wonderful thing as well, I really think that working out bridges that gap between seated mindfulness and dynamic presence, or whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah, the dynamic presence or peace of moving and being conscious is more applicable to day to day and interactions with people than it would be to just sit and retreat. But it has its place as well, for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
So in terms of variety, so we know that the body can move in many, many, many different ways. And that if you're paying attention to it, you might move different every single day. So the intensity versus the quietness versus the craziness, you know, it could be that you're, as you said, wiggling things out. What kind of advice do you want to give in variety of movement that would benefit people? Like if they have no idea where to even start, what does variety mean?
So first, I would like to paraphrase you, where you said that it's nice to, people really want some, you know, some parameters. And I think for a total beginner, having rules, in parentheses, or in quotation marks, English is my second language, in quotation marks.
You're good.
Rules,
it still matters
with an umlaut. I'm sure you're gonna edit this podcast so I seem way more well spoken and eloquent than what I am. but I think that giving yourself rules can be really beneficial, so that you have a certain boundary within which you can operate and experiment. Without having any type of boundary, it would be like learning a language without knowing each individual letter or character, you know? So if you're a total beginner, get some rules, get a framework, get some rigid technique, but just don't necessarily trust the reason as to why you have to do that specific technique. Instead, think of it as a structure, a skeleton that allows you to easier navigate yourself through these movements. After that, after you feel like, okay, I now know where the boundaries are because I've crossed them and I've allowed myself to stay within them. After that, I would start looking at movements as tasks instead of techniques. A technique is a specific way of moving that will achieve a specific result. A task is a task. It's an assignment that you can solve in as many different ways as you would like. So instead of saying to squat, you should stand with your feet shoulder width apart, your feet should be turned out approximately 15 degrees, you need to flex your knees and your hips, maintain anterior tilt of the pelvis, and maintain a neutral spine as you're in the bottom position. You could say a squat is a movement where you have one or two feet on the floor and you try to get your hips as close to the floor as possible in whatever ways you think is interesting, and then you get back up. And it's not a competition. It's not about getting your hip through the floor. it's just a guideline. Put on some music that you like, hang out with some people that you enjoy, pet your dog, have an interesting civil discourse with your cat, and then just experiment and research that assignment, because in all probability, you're going to end up moving in way more ways than what a technique would allow you or give you. So thinking of it as assignments is way more interesting. And I mean, think about it this way. If you were going to school, like let's say that each of us, every single one of us, we were given the opportunity to re-educate ourselves. And we have the option between two schools. One school, they promise that they're going to give you every single answer to every single question. Your job is simply to memorize these answers, and as long as you can remember them, you will ace every single test. The other school says, we're not going to give you answers, we're going to give you assignments and problems that you get to research and explore yourself, so that when you get out into the real world, where grades don't necessarily matter as much, you have experience in how it is to solve problems. Now, I don't know about everyone else, but I know which school I would like to go for. I want to educate myself so I can solve problems, not just so I can remember answers. And I think the same thing applies to movement. You want to think of movement as not just presenting the same perfect answer over and over again in the hopes that it's going to get you better grades. You want to think of it as being problems that you can use to educate yourself, to teach yourself about how you can move, about what movement does for you, about what movement does your body, what movement feels like.
This reminds me of back in the day, if our parents said, go to the store and get broccoli, and there wasn't broccoli, we would have had to make a decision on what vegetable was similar that would still be good for dinner. So we might have bought cauliflower and come home, crossed our fingers and hoped that we wouldn't get beat because we picked a vegetable that, you know, was a similar value. Nowadays, if a child was to go to the store and broccoli wasn't there, there would be texts, phone calls, no decision making whatsoever. And to kind of make this into the body, you know, I think that if someone was gardening in the day and something felt uncomfortable, they might get up, move their hips a different way, stretch, go inside, take a break.
Yeah.
And I think now we've kind of lost those cues. And this is what I think you were saying in terms of like the problem solving is they push through. And then they get to the point where they're really needing movement in another way to kind of offset what problems they had before. It's kind of sad. Yeah. It's sad that we've sort of lost this. Like you said, dialogue versus monologue. That's genius. Do you consider yourself a philosopher, John?
No.
But you are.
One thing that I have a really, really hard reading is philosophy. Because every time I read a philosophy book, I go like, just get to the point, please. I think, on every single podcast I've done, I always mention my father. There must be something there worth investigating. But my father has always encouraged us to think about or just try to take a bystander's perspective of our own lives. You know, I'm born and raised in Norway, but my dad is from China. So we have these two way different cultures. And once you kind of see how each culture operates, and you see they're really dealing with the same type of questions, they just answer them wildly different, then it really encourages you to think about, is this necessary, or can we recontextualize this so that it can actually be beneficial? How do we communicate between these two different ideas of what life is supposed to be like? So he's certainly been a huge influence on me. That being said, I don't know the difference between Voltaire or Descartes or... See, that's the only names I know. I don't even know if Voltaire is a philosopher.
But
there are some Greeks there, I'm sure.
But you do think beyond the surface. And I bet when you were listening or reading philosophy, you were just branching off into other things that either didn't make sense or would... I just feel like that's you.
I really like connecting dots. I think it's... I have an obsessive nature when it comes to a lot of things. So once I'm interested in something, I find myself always drawing parallels to whatever else I might be doing and that thing. So like with movement, which is, you know, probably the biggest part of my life, I'm always going to try to look at it from the perspective of whatever else I'm doing. And that does help give you other perspectives.
Which is good if it doesn't drive you crazy. You know, there are some people that might keep going with it that get too lost in coming back to the present.
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
You're still young. I have a father story, if we're going to bring fathers into it. So my dad's Italian. He came over from Italy when he was 17. Mm-hmm. And he used to tell us if we woke up in the morning and said that we were tired, he'd say, well, that's because the aliens had you working all night long. And so, of course, you would be tired. And it wouldn't ever be because we had ice cream the night before.
So. That's wonderful and horrifying all at the same time. The aliens made you work.
The aliens, yeah. But I'm normal. I think I'm normal. I'm somewhat normal now. So I do want to talk about, and I think this was in one of your emails, mm-hmm. I think. It was how you had said that everybody should pick the movements that you would want to do when you're 80 or 85 and do them now. So even if it's small, like I want to be able to get up and down in the from the floor when I'm 85. So that's something that I do every single day. Mm. You were saying if you want to do 5 pull-ups, 10 sit-ups, you know, whatever it is, pick that and do that every day. And you will be able to do that every day when you're older. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah. So I was happy you chose one of the articles I could remember. That's the problem with writing one article per week. You don't necessarily remember it all. This was my idea of a physical retirement plan, you know? So pick the exercises that you can imagine yourself doing and being happy to do when you were, let's say, 80 years old. And then you just do them really often. Now, it's not necessarily only that you're doing maintenance work. It's not necessarily that you're only progressing, but it's also that you're giving yourself a kind of litmus test. You know, you're basically checking in with your body. So let's say that I slept really poorly. I've been stressed out. Maybe I didn't have a lot of good meals. Maybe I trained way too much the day before. The day after, I wake up and I do these movements and then I notice, oh, this feels like crap. Well, you've then gained some information. You know that if you want to be able to do those movements when you're 80, if you're going to travel down the same path by not getting enough sleep, not getting enough food, being stressed out, working out too little or too much, then you know that that's not a sustainable retirement plan. So I think that's the thing that I appreciate about it the most. It's not that I think it's super important for a person to do pull-ups when they're 80, but it's more so that they get to check in with themselves, you know, to have that conversation where you say, so I suspect that you're gonna feel fine when you do this, but do you feel fine when you do this?
That's something that I think is really important. My mom is one of eight, so we had older aunts that had some health issues, and it was one of the things that, like, you could see physically things starting to get worse and worse for them. And I know for me, like, getting up and down from the floor is the one thing, because if you fall and you can't get back up, that's bad. You know, I actually watched a gentleman about a year ago who was 83, and he actually fell fine. He tried to get back up, and that's when he fell and everything got worse. So it's just something that I feel like sitting on the floor is awesome and amazing, and being able to get up from it is just as amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I love that your physical retirement plan really hit home for me. Cool. That was that during one of your email phases, or was that just a newsletter? I can't remember.
I think that was a newsletter, like the weekly.
Yeah. Email.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you're mentioning this getting up from the floor, by the way. Like, it's because getting up from the floor, it's not an exercise, but it can still be a really challenging thing to do. You know, getting up from the floor, putting on your shoes without sitting down, crawling under something, crawling over something, traversing a wall, walking up a muddy path. Like, these are movements that are practical. You know, they're going to happen at some point. And we see the utility of these movements. And that's one thing that I kind of feel that exercising often kind of distorts our vision of our bodies at times, because we always talk about the physiological adaptations and benefits of an exercise. Like, this exercise targets the hamstrings. This exercise targets the serratus anterior. This movement targets the sternocleidomastoideus. Like, we always think about which muscle, which part of our body are we affecting. But what does that ultimately matter? Like, to a human life, what does it matter if we target that muscle specifically? If you're not into a very particular performance sport, if you're not into, let's say, bodybuilding or fitness, like bikini fitness or athletic fitness or something like that, it's probably not that important. It's really cool to know exactly which body part you're affecting, but what does it actually mean to your life? Now, getting up from the floor, you actually get to see the result as you're practicing the movement, where you confirm to yourself, hey, I have a body and I am a body that is able to get up and down from the floor. I just gave myself an experience that confirms that capability. And giving yourself those kind of experiences, they're so important, because it actually gives you a type of a confidence beyond just but what your body consists of, and not only what it represents, but what it actually can do for you in various situations, which I think is really cool.
It's really cool. And I also feel like in the reverse, for some people, that we practice that in class and they can't get up, and they say, you know, I didn't even know that I couldn't do this. And it's something that they want to be able to do. So they know that that's something that they want to practice daily, or at least weekly, of, you know, getting up and down from the floor different ways. Yeah. So I guess the next thing I wanted to talk to you about was, what would a person who went to you for a client, like, what would your assessment be, or intake, or how would you start with somebody? Are you even doing in person right now, or is it all through Zoom? No,
it's, yeah, everything is online, and I don't even have anything one-on-one right now. I ended up having I ended up having a waiting list, and I ended up getting involved in, you know, online communities and that sort of stuff. And I found that I enjoy the latter. So that's where I kind of focus my efforts. But I have worked with online coaching. and one-to-one, like in-person coaching, that has been, you know, the majority of my work. And what I've found happened when I work with people is that, you know, you need to establish a rapport before anything else. Like, it really doesn't matter how specific an assessment you do if you don't get the honest answers. And it's not that a person is dishonest, it's just that we always modify our truth, we always change small details or leave some small details out of things if we don't feel comfortable with the person that we're talking to. It's just natural. And so if a person comes to me, we talk a bit about goals, we do a little assessment just so I can get a general impression of how the person moves. And then I just come up with something that I think is going to allow the person to have a lot of positive and interesting experiences. Because it's not like, you know, after watching a person move and then asking them about their goals or about their medical history that I'm going to know exactly what kind of program to give them. But I present a program and then we kind of use that as an experiment in itself while we get to know each other. And as we get to know each other, then gradually we get to make the program more and more specific to the person. And I'm not saying specific as in this is the answer. I'm saying specific as in it's a more and more specific set of exercises and tasks and whatnot.
And it's a journey. It's yeah. A journey for them to go through. But you do give people things to do at home, right? This is about empowering them to have things to do daily, right?
Yeah. It's basically about coming up with habits, you know? Like, how can we make movement a natural part of somebody's life without asking them to sacrifice their life? So figuring out how we can walk more, how we can make certain chores more physical, and how we can kind of bridge the gap between I am working out and I am not working out. Because right now, like in our culture, the gap between those two, recovery and work, the gap is way too wide, you know? When we're at the gym, we expect ourselves to push ourselves to the very limit. And when we're at home, then we're supposed to be either be stressed out about all the things that we're supposed to do, or we're supposed to be totally sedentary. And although it can be nice to have a clear distinction at times, I don't think it's healthy for us in the long run to only think about movement as being this extreme thing where you have to go, you know, all out. And then when you're not working out, then you don't think about movement.
Yeah, I think movement just all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. And now with people on Zoom for work that could be sitting at their desks for long periods of time, you know, aren't doing that. Just get up, yeah. Get water, make the food further away, you know. Just anything. I mean, I try and move my lymphatic system, so I might mm-hmm. just bounce. I might just bounce up and down to try and get things moving again from sitting so long. Yeah,
it's a great idea. I'm during like long stretches of work where I have to, like, for example, when I wrote articles, I would use a timer, like, you know, the Pomodoro timer, 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off. Mm-hmm. My 5 minute break was always movement. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get to include that into my everyday life. And I noticed that I just felt so much better, not just in terms of mental clarity and physical comfort, but also in regards to the guilt of not working out and not using a workout as a compensation for sitting for too long, you know? I remember I wrote this book in Norwegian about handstands, and I felt so bad because I was like sitting there writing about movement and about, you know, physical activity, about this particular skill. And I was like, oh shit, I need to move. I've been sitting here for 5 hours just typing away. And I felt bad, I felt guilty. And then I was like, well, that's not nice to add on top of writing 5 hours, sitting on your butt, and then not working out. There's no reason for that. So just by adding in movement there, it helped immensely.
It really does. What is the biggest thing that you think someone could do to stay healthy physically?
That's a good question. I think give yourself positive experiences with movement. That's the most important thing. If you want to like anything, it's, we often talk about working out as like you just have to get into the habit of working out. You just have to push yourself. You just have to become disciplined enough. And I think all those points have some merit to them. But if you don't like it, if you don't accumulate enough positive experiences, then what's going to happen? You're going to end up not looking forward to it. And there are so many ways of making movement into a positive experience. It could be the social aspect. It could be how often and how hard and how much you do of it. It could be what you do as well. And exploring all those different elements and seeing what do I need to actually feel like this is a positive experience. If you don't go through that, then you shouldn't be shocked if it doesn't turn out to be a sustainable practice, you know? So my advice would be, like, really respect your own experience and just go for whatever you like. If it's martial arts, if it's dancing, if it's juggling, if it's just jumping up and down, if it's skipping rope, if it's riding a bike, I don't care if you work out correctly. I care that you move and that you feel good about it. And I think that we all deserve to think that way about how we engage with our bodies and how we engage with our environment. So do things you like.
Well, if you don't like it, then you're most likely not going to go back to it day after day.
Exactly. I mean, that's one thing that I think that the problem with information is that we find ourselves having to kind of justify every single thing we do, you know, like, because we have information about the mental benefits or the social benefits of dance, and because we have information about the fastest bike times or the best bike, or because we have information about muscles, we assume that we should be able to explain to everyone else why we're doing this thing. Oh, the reason I train martial arts is so that I can defend myself and so that I can be a valuable member of my family should somebody ever come into my home. Or the reason I'm training legs is because every day is leg day, and this is our culture now. Why can't we just have preferences? Is it really so bad to say that I'm doing this specific movement or this specific activity because I like it? I think being able to own your preferences and not apologizing for it is one of the most powerful mental tools that you have.
Yeah, I think people feel guilt.
Yeah.
If a movement feels too good and they're doing it because they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to ask that same question now, mm-hmm. but mentally. So what's the biggest thing you think someone could do to stay healthy mentally? Probably all the same things.
probably all the same things. Probably. Whatever extra I'm going to say here, it'll probably go back to movement as well. But gratitude is very helpful. At least I found that to be very helpful for me. And to be able to understand, you know, that your thoughts and your feelings, they are not you. Being able to distance yourself a bit from them. And don't be afraid to be picky about the people that you surround yourself with and that you choose to be influenced by. The healthiest person that I've ever met, I actually talked about this guy on one of our Painsplained course calls, an elderly gentleman. He is the healthiest person I've met. Physically for his age and for his experience level, but also mentally. And I asked him, what is the secret? And he said some things that I'm not going to say publicly because they don't suit this format. But he also said, get rid of people that you don't need, that you won't be of benefit to because they're not of benefit to you. If they don't have a positive influence on your life, don't have them in your life. You get to decide that. You get to choose.
That's huge. Yeah. That's huge for people to decide. And I think that during all of this, it might be easier mm-hmm. for people to be able to make those decisions. But yeah, I mean, it can be so draining mm-hmm. physically, emotionally, mentally to be around people that are not well suited for your life.
Yeah, without a doubt. There's a lot of stigma around, you know, saying this friendship is not for me or this relationship is not for me. Though I think there's actually more stigma with friendship.
That's how we're going to do it. This friendship is not for me. I'm sorry. We're going to have to break up. That's it. That's all you have to say. You heard it from John.
Mm-hmm. Ditch your friends.
When you say thoughts and feelings are not you.
Yeah.
I think that can be tough for people to understand. Do you want to explain that further, what you mean?
Well, we don't exist in isolation. You know, we are influenced by our environment. We're influenced by our past. We're influenced by the people in our environment, and they can often make us feel and think certain things. And if we always think that we are in control of our thoughts and feelings, then we also assume that we're in control of our past, all the people around us, and our environment, which I think we all pretty much know that we're not. So by being able to take a step back when you feel something and you think something and then tell yourself, this is a part of me, but it is not me in this moment. I am more than this singular thought or this thing, singular feeling. You give yourself a bit of space that I think is necessary so that you get to move past it. Doesn't mean that you should run away or chase it. It just means that you get some space. One of my favorite things that have ever been said was said by my mother in my sister's wedding. And she said, she quoted a poem, I don't remember it, but it was basically like strings on a guitar or notes on a sheet. If they're too close together, you can't expect them to harmonize. You need space. And I think that goes for people. And to be conscious about that space and, of course, communicate about it, not necessarily just ditch your friends immediately, but also with your thoughts and feelings. And sometimes even with your body, get some space between yourself and your corporeal self as well. That way it's easier to find the harm. Meaning, put it that way.
Well, I still think you're a philosopher. It's very evident.
Or just romanticize things way too much.
Is there anything that you want to tell people what to look forward to that you might be offering in the future? I will put all of your information in the episode notes of all the programs that you have right now, but is there anything that we can look towards for the future?
Well, I have a course on current pain science that I do with Oliver that you're also part of. We're probably going to do that again. I have an online coaching group that goes by the name of the Movement Guild. We are now finishing this season. We're going to do another season probably in February or March. And this is for people who want to explore the basics, explore different ways of moving, and explore them with an amazing community. And I also have another community that goes by the name of Movement Quest, where we give people quests. We don't give you exercises. We give you tasks. And then it's up to you to see what you would like to do and what you would like to explore. And it's also a really fun community. And that is basically it.
I love it. Well, I will make sure that I include everything on the episode notes for you. So thank you so much for being part of this today. I'm just so happy that, you know, you could share your insights with everyone, because it's just, it's great for people to hear things different ways all the time and be able to process it these different ways.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a really nice conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. John is all the way in Norway, and I just feel so grateful that we are able to take myself here in New Hampshire and then John over in another part of the world and be able to come together and speak about the things that we love, to have these conversations where we may have some agreements on what we cover. We may have some teachings and learnings of what we share with one another, and just be able to continue along a path that helps others. So if you are looking for any information on John, I did include that all in the episode notes. However, if you want to learn more, feel free to contact me. And anything Ohana, you can find at ohanayoganh.com. I love you all so very much. Have the best day. Bye-bye.